Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Keener, joined by staff writer Jane McGrath.
Hey there.
And Jane, sadly, is still suffering from her cold.
Yeah, I have to apologize.
But I have faith that she's going to shake it very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
So today we are going to go back to basics with you guys. We're not going to review all the fun definitions of things like isthmus and peninsula, but I think that every now and then it is very helpful to think about terms that we use very casually and consider where they came from. And the one that we're going to talk about today is civilization, because we're going to discuss whether or not Mesopotamia was in fact the cradle of civilization, as we like to refer to it.
Yeah, a lot of people do refer to it as the cradle of civilization because it started a lot of things that we now just consider part of the definition of civilization that didn't exist beforehand.
Which, if I can pipe in and be a total brown noser, I actually have the definition of civilization from Merriam-Webster.
Okay.
And again, in back to basic spirit, I will read it for everyone out there. Civilization, a relatively high level of cultural and technological development, specifically the stage of cultural development at which writing and the keeping of written records is attained.
Yeah, and there's a lot of arguments about what makes civilization. Obviously, if you disagree with that definition, you're not alone. There are a lot of arguments from historians and archaeologists. And one archaeologist, V. Gordon Child, suggests some criteria for what makes a civilization. He says it has to be large, has a concentrated population, specialized occupations, public buildings, social classes and rankings. Writing, like that definition mentioned, government trade over long distances, and the ability to produce and store food for a long period of time. To think about a time when this didn't exist is good for trying to wrap your mind around the beginning of civilization and what it means to have a civilization.
Precisely. And if we look at a timeline of ancient history, we can see that agricultural practices really began in 8000 BC, and prior to this time, people primarily were nomads, and they would travel from place to place looking for food. And whether they hunted animals or they foraged for vegetables and plants, that was up to that particular tribe. Perhaps they did both. But as far as actually being rooted and fixed to a place, it meant much more than farming. It meant that you had a cooperative society at that point, because people in your tribe had to designate who would plant what, how it would be harvested and when, and how to disseminate the bounty of your crops.
Yeah.
And you see in this sort of cooperative society the very beginnings of what civilization is.
Right, and they mark 8,000 BC as sort of the beginning of agriculture. Obviously, you need the technology and the understanding to grow things and crops to sustain either a small tribe or a large tribe. And also the domestication of animals, which I know a little bit about. I actually wrote how domestication of animals works, which was one of my favorite articles and exposes the dork that I am. But it's just really interesting to think about all these things that settled life offers a group, and, you know, the ability to use milk and meat and have all this around you without having to forage and hunt and gather.
And it frees you up to do so much more,
right, like
with your
art.
Life,
yeah.
With like art and practicing organized religion, mm-hmm. and building a fixed structure that's going to be there for some time. And the people of the Fertile Crescent were actually pretty lucky because they happened upon some indigenous crops like wheat and wild barley, and they were so plentiful that they settled there. And that's when the Mesopotamians really began their civilization. It was sort of, again, by happenstance that they found these indigenous bountiful crops and they could actually become farmers using the land.
Yeah, and it's not exactly an accident about where civilization began, because we should mention Mesopotamia actually comes from the Greek for between two rivers. Mm-hmm. And it was a very fertile place, even though not all of the area got a lot of rainfall. Mm-hmm. The soil was very fertile.
From the Tigris and Euphrates.
Right, the Tigris and Euphrates, I'm sorry. Yeah, we should mention that. And although originally civilization started like very near these rivers, once the civilization started perfecting irrigation and canals, they were able to expand this farming and agriculture much farther out.
And that's what's so huge, because if you take up a farming plot near a very fertile land, you can feed your tribe, sure. But once the people of Mesopotamia perfected the idea of irrigation, mm-hmm. and building canals, they were able to experience a huge boom in population. And so instead of having one very concentrated group of people in a specific area, they were able to grow to the surrounding parts.
Could sustain and, you know, just provide food and everything for cities, so that not
exactly.
everyone needed to be a farmer, for instance. Cities is one of the huge things that comes into the definition of what makes a civilization. A lot of people think that you have to have cities in order to be a civilization. Obviously, these were the first. So to think about it, this civilization of the Mesopotamians flourished before, you know, the Egyptians, the Greeks, and the mm-hmm. Romans. It was the predecessor to all of these. But also, we should distinguish this kind of civilization from those in that it wasn't very unified. The Mesopotamians, they were usually city-states, just sort of cities that were, you know, they lived independently, they had their own structure, they weren't ruled by anything bigger than them. Unlike the Egyptians and the Romans, there wasn't very unified at this point, and consisted of many languages and cultures mm-hmm. as well. Out of the Mesopotamians came so many innovations and things that also came to help what civilization meant and just sustain the civilization in general.
And like we've mentioned before, there are basic differences between nomadic tribes that had a sense of culture, those who created cave drawings, or those who we have relics from that show that they obviously worship some sort of god because they fashion things in that sort of shape or form to allude to that fact. But as far as being rooted in place, the Mesopotamians were able to start building temples and really starting an organized religion around their faith. So we see all these very sturdy and cool ziggurat structures throughout Mesopotamia and Babylon, and we can tell that they had organized religion. We know that they developed cuneiform and then later a type of phonetic writing, and we have records that show that they did things like accounting and they kept track of their finances. And it's indicators like these that show these people weren't going anywhere. They were very much settled in a spot, sort of like you wouldn't pay rent if you were a bum who was just going to abandon town. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to be living in a place for a while, you pay rent, you pay your electricity bills, and you probably keep a tally in your checkbook of yeah. where this money goes to.
Yeah, and accounting was one of the most important things that our earliest records of known writing has to do with accounting, obviously out of necessity. But in addition to that, out of that came writing that was more literary. They actually had epic stories and poetry even, and which formed part of the first book was actually Gilgamesh, which is an epic story about a Sumerian king quest for immortality. They also had, relating to religion, they had a story very like the Noah and the Ark story, the Great Flood. Obviously, writing is very connected to religion, but these are both things that once they got formalized were the first of their kind of civilization.
And so along with the idea of law in society comes written codes, and you'll probably remember the podcast we did about the Code of Hammurabi, and some important themes from Hammurabi's code are pretty evident in the Mesopotamian settlements too, of the ideas of restitution and retaliation and justice, punishment for doing wrong to your neighbors. And this shows that, again, this is a cooperative society. And in addition to living lawfully and living spiritually, they also created their own system of time. They had a calendar. They did mathematics by which they kept their tax records and accounting.
Yeah, and time is really interesting because they started a system that we still use today, and that is based on the number 60. You know, we have 60 seconds, we have 60 minutes in an hour, and so to think that that has existed to this day is astounding. They also came up with the idea of dividing a circle into 360 degrees. So you definitely see the foundings of science in this civilization. Yeah.
But again, you know, there's a dark side to this kind of massive technological advancement too. And that's the idea that when you have power and you have leisure time afforded you by living in a place and having a very, you know, fixed system of farming and domestication of animals and different trades around town, you get the idea that you can go out and conquer other territories that may be close by, and that perhaps your civilization is superior. So we see evidence of empiricism in ancient Mesopotamia, with people going out and expanding their empire and engaging in wars and even instilling systems of slavery in their society.
Yeah, that's right. You have the first empire coming out of this time, at least in the third millennium BC. The city-states, which were often battling each other at this point, were taken over and unified by the Akkads, who built the first empire, like, known to humanity.
And if you remember the podcast that we did about the Terracotta Army and the first emperor of China, you know that amassing great wealth and power and land is, you know, as much of a curse as it is a blessing, because, for instance, in 2300 BC, Sumer was unified under one ruler before it had been multiple cities and was brought together. And with unification, I think, comes a great deal of hostility sometimes. People can sometimes balk at the idea of their own culture being subjugated for another culture coming in. And
mm-hmm. And you have this idea, I mean, like, the, you know, one race is better than another race, because you have the idea of slavery as well coming out of this. That, you know, should be mentioned that they had a particular class system where, as, you know, one of the archaeologists I mentioned, that's one of the criteria, they had an upper class with nobles and landowners and government officials and priests and kings. In the middle, you had the merchants, you know, the farmers, the artisans, tradespeople. You can kind of see the middle class coming out of there. And the lowest, you had slaves, and this was really the beginning of slavery as well.
And classes are further designated by the fact that the ruler at the very top gets to disseminate the goods that are produced in society. Hmm. So it's very hard to move up in this type of system when you're being dictated how to live and you're given the sustenance you need to live. But many scholars would argue that while the Mesopotamian civilization certainly did give birth to facets of civilization that we still consider important to the definition today, there are other ancient civilizations out there that could be even older.
Yeah, historians argue that other city-states and stuff should be really the cradle of civilization as we refer to it today, and that existed in about the late 3rd or early 2nd millennia BC. It was a vast city in now Turkmenistan, and it was about 1,000 square miles, and it had canals and palaces, and so you can see, obviously, they had a civilization there.
They had irrigation systems in place, and there's even some evidence that they traded with Egypt. And then over in Turkey, in about 7,000 BC, in Çatalhöyük, there's evidence of 10,000 people living in a cooperative society, farming and domesticating animals. And not unlike the city in Turkmenistan, there are also shrines here and centers for religion. So there's evidence that these people were settled in place. They were spiritual people. However, the clincher, there's really no evidentiary support that they had an organized government.
Yeah, and my favorite part, I think I would rather call the Sumerians the cradle of civilization, because I think, like, there's evidence they invented the wheel. And it's like, that's the ultimate invention, you know, this, inventing the wheel. You know, in addition to that, they had mass production of pottery. They brewed the first beer. It's very important to me. And they made the first glass. I think the Sumerians just made so many, I guess because their civilization actually sustained throughout the years, they have so many claims to fame, and I guess that's really why most people consider it the cradle
of civilization. Yeah. And to me, it's just another argument of who gets to be first. Jane and I have talked before about who was first to America, you know, who invented the first car or the first assembly line. And it's a really silly squabble if you ask me, because every society in history has really contributed something important, whether it's a positive contribution that we've modeled and, you know, infused with our latest technology to improve our standards today, or it's a negative contribution that, you know, helps us use that age-old maxim, you have to learn from history or will it repeat itself. You know, we learn not to engage in certain types of warfare and discrimination. So all contributions from all people
have made some sort of impact. That is true. I have to play devil's advocate, though. It is cool to see who was the first, you know, to give credit where credit's due and just to know where ideas began and know how astoundingly old they are, really. It really gives you a conception of understanding. You know, you can really understand civilization when you know where it began. So
that's true. I think there's also something to be said for being very fortunate for settling in an area like the Fertile Crescent, where the mm-hmm. land is obviously ripe for a civilization to grow out of it. I wonder how many civilizations out there, or almost could be civilizations, nomadic tribes of people, tried and failed because they were in the wrong type of land and it couldn't support them.
One interesting side note to this is I remember in my research for this podcast that some historians think that the old myth of the Garden of Eden, actually, the story actually that Eden actually was located in Mesopotamia in the Fertile Crescent. And that kind of makes sense when you think about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I could keep this debate going forever, but all of you out there are probably anxious to put your paws on your own dictionaries to look up civilization and city and town and other riveting definitions. So we will cut it short. But I would like to encourage all of you, if you have not already, to visit our brand new Stuff You Missed in History Class blog.
Yeah, Candace and I each write on the blog every day, and it has to do with a range of subjects, stuff that interests us that we think will interest you, and news in the field of history and archaeology and everything like that. We also address all of your questions on the Mondays of every week as well, so check that out.
And on Fridays, we do a little podcast recap, so a chance for you all to get your comments in about the stuff we've been talking about on air with you. And if you have a piece of feedback for us or an idea for a future podcast, be sure to email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. And if you would like to see the article on which this podcast was based called Why Was Mesopotamia Called the Cradle of Civilization, you can find it on our website at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host,
Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.